This podcast is part of Mishmash Media. Hey, buddy.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, mate. Good. Welcome to the second episode of Curbcast Season 3. My name is Ivan.
And I'm Stephen.
And this is our second podcast where we get episodes of Curb Your Enthusiasm in chronological order and we review them scene by scene. Very different to our original podcast, Bid Wa Bus, Steve. We don't talk about secondary characters too much, but we go into the episodes. And from season three on, Stephen and I have never watched the series before. I have watched seasons one and two in the past before we did one and two, but this is fresh for both of us from here on in.
Yeah, no, and so far it was, it's been really good. Last week, the first episode was really awesome. Love talking about that. This episode was pretty good too, so I'm looking forward to talking about it. And for whatever the rest of season three brings as well.
Absolutely.
We do have season one available on our normal Bid Wa Bus podcast feed. If you're listening to this right now, you're most likely a Patreon supporter, so it's available to you anyway. But just in case, and if you want to point anyone else in the direction of Curbcast or our primary podcast, but I don't want to be a secondary character, just check that out on your podcast app of choice and you'll scroll back in the feed and find season one for free.
Indeed. But anyway, mate, let's talk about season three, episode two of Curb Your Enthusiasm, the Benadryl Brownie, a fun episode.
Yeah, just by the title, before I watched it, I knew it was going to be a pretty twisted one because I thought, well, what's cough syrup doing in brownie? You know, this Viking brownies, someone's up to no good. And definitely met my expectations.
Yeah, with a wonderful cameo from Joan Rivers right at the end.
Yeah.
I've seen better faces on a hemorrhoid.
Unexpected. When E.T. phoned home, was she the one who answered?
What's it like in Loch Ness?
Yeah. Brutal.
Really? Yeah, well, she was brutal, her style of comedy, so yeah. It fit in really well in that scene.
Yeah, no, it was unexpected, but an awesome appearance. I love Joan Rivers.
Yeah, rest in peace to Joan. She was awesome.
For sure.
Anyway, a bit of a synopsis about the Benadryl Brownie, aired in the US on HBO for the first time on 23rd of September 2002. Thanks to Larry's miscommunication on his new cell phone, Richard Lewis's new girlfriend, Deborah, succumbs to peanut allergies a week before they're supposed to go to the Emmys. A practicing Christian Scientist, she doesn't take any medicine. So Richard and Larry devise a scheme to cook up some brownies laced with medicine. And of course, a running theme of the show, Steve, like all things Larry does, the plan backfires.
Yeah, it does backfire. And we'll find out how a bit later on when we get to those final few scenes.
Absolutely. And I actually have a trivia fact about the episode, Steve. Do you remember the episode The Thong, I think, from season two with the Groats syndrome, the made-up syndrome?
Yeah, so you and I are looking at the same trivia point, but you continue.
Yeah, the restaurant that Larry eats at with Mike, the TV repair guy, it's called John O'Groats, and it's a reference to Groats disease or Groats syndrome from season two.
Groats syndrome. It sounds like a real syndrome.
It does. Yeah, I remember when we talked about it, it sounded real, but we Googled it, and like I think there was like an article about it, and it just said, no, it's from Curb Your Enthusiasm. It's not real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's been a lot of confused Googling, like, oh, maybe I've got Groats syndrome. And then you Google symptoms. Oh, it's not actually real.
It's fake, but it's something like a Groats syndrome.
Yeah.
Anyway, scene one, my friend, of the Benadryl Brownie. Larry and Richard are at a phone store. Larry is looking for a new phone to purchase. Richard says that he has found the one in his new girlfriend, Deborah, who is a Christian Scientist, which bemuses Larry. And very interesting because I thought Richard, he had his previous girlfriend from seasons one and two. So obviously they did break up between now and then. And Richard, you know, I think he's really clinging on to try and find, you know, some stability in his life and he wants to get married. And he thinks that Deborah, despite being a very conservative, you know, Christian Scientist, I should say, he thinks she's the one.
Yeah, I think he is desperate for that emotional and relationship stability. You know, a lot of the storyline in season one is him talking about his previous addictions and personal issues, and he's in a much better place in the show now, but obviously there's still some lingering instability and some emotional turmoil. So I think he, as a person, he goes through girlfriends fairly quickly, and he intentionally tried to find, you know, like a Christian woman or a more conservative woman because he thought that they could offer him that stability. And he spends the rest of the episode to-ing and fro-ing. He's like, well, I don't really like her because she's ugly, but he's trying to convince himself that he should stay with her. So yeah, I think it's a bit of a battle for him.
Yeah, it is a battle. You know, he probably, yeah, I mean, she's an attractive woman prior to the allergic reaction later in the episode. But he's just trying to find, I don't know, you're right, some stability and maybe some like a religious person to keep him on the straight and narrow. But Steve, have you ever heard of Christian Science? Is that a real thing?
Yeah, look, I'd heard a few things about it before, not a whole lot. The part in this scene where Larry makes a joke about how they don't take conventional medicine. That's their belief. Rang a bell. I've heard that somewhere in my life. But beyond that, and just the name Christian Scientist and the fact that it's to some people maybe a bit of an oxymoron. I didn't know much more than that. What about you?
I'm pretty sure I've seen a church, like the Christian Science Church on St. Kilda Road in Melbourne. I think like it's on the way to, on the south, like towards South Melbourne. I think on St. Kilda Road, they do have like a similar, like a denomination. I think I remember like catching a tram heading to the city. I do recall seeing that. I mean, it could be Christian Science or it could be something similar, but I do recall the name Science in it. It wasn't obviously Scientology, but yeah, no, I think I have heard the name, but I have no idea what it was. But yeah, it's weird how they don't take medicine. Conventional medicine. They go by the, power of divine intervention or power of healing to heal them.
Yeah, it's funny that it's, it's obviously, I don't know a lot of anything really about their traditions except the modern medicine or no medicine at all. But I'm assuming it's still aligned with traditional Christian theology and, literature, but they just sort of have added their flavor in and, maybe they do a few things that other denominations don't do.
Yeah.
But it's like the Mormons or like Jehovah's Witnesses, Jehovah's Witnesses don't believe in blood transfusions.
That's right.
Every subcategory of Christianity has their own little quirks and identifiers. As I'm talking about Christian Science, I vaguely remember Christian Science in a conversation about this sort of thing, about, these little weird quirks that certain subsects of Christianity or other forms of religion do. And I think it was mentioned in the same sentence or the same conversation as Scientology, as like, they're kind of cultish maybe,
right.
Of that like they're a bit wacky, and a bit, you should avoid them. They're a bit maybe even dangerous. I don't know. I'm not remembering 100%, but it's a vague memory I have that some people think that they're in that bucket of, culty, but still kind of mainstream religion, faiths, whatever.
Yeah. Now you mentioned it does sound a bit culty, Christian Science, but I guess we find out a bit more about Christian Science, and there is a scene where they do like a little prayer group at Deborah's parents' house, so I guess we can probably elaborate on that when we get to it, eh?
Yeah, we'll discover more as we go along.
Outside the car park of the phone store, Richard asks if they can watch Richard's special at Larry's house after dinner. Larry gets a call from Cheryl on his new phone. He asks her to get Ted Danson to get Chef Randy to do the catering and to avoid peanuts, as Deborah has an allergy, and last week, Steve, we said that the restaurant will probably be a running theme of the show. I'm surprised the restaurant didn't feature, but at least there was a mention of Ted Danson and one of the chefs, Chef Randy from the restaurant, Bobo's. He goes in to cater for him.
Yeah, they did refer to the restaurant a few times in this episode, through Randy. And I think one other time as well, Larry mentions it, and I think, if you have the restaurant in every episode, it kind of is a bit overdone, but just mentioning it to keep it in people's minds of, oh yeah, that this thing is happening in the background of this episode, I think is a good writing choice, but no doubt it will actually be a bit more prominent in future episodes. And I'm sure there'll be more meetings and more troubles. And I'm guessing maybe there'll be like a troubled opening where everything goes wrong and Larry causes a whole bunch of shit. I don't know.
But, yes.
Hinting at it in this episode, I thought was smart because it keeps it relevant, but it's not overplaying it from episode two.
Yeah, well, it's still part of the arc, but it's not like a big, feature in this episode. It's just kind of alluded to, which is good. Yeah, because otherwise it'd be too in your face if they mentioned the restaurant or they went to the restaurant, every time. I don't know. Do you feel like a Seinfeld episode with monks?
Yeah. And I mean, monks, is a is a constant setting of Seinfeld, but monks itself is not that important as a setting. It's just a place for them to go. Sometimes they interact with monk staff, and then, there's a couple of episodes where the boss becomes involved, but it's mostly just a setting. Whereas I think in this, the restaurant itself, Bobo's, and all the investors will be more relevant to the storyline as opposed to just a place they go and hang out. One thing I wanted to, before we move on to the next scene, one thing I wanted to bring up with you in this scene, and I think it demonstrates Richard Lewis, maybe being in a, maybe he's just in a bad period of his life, with addiction and mental health issues, you go through, it's a roller coaster, you've got highs and lows, and, maybe Richard is trying to get out of a low, and that's why he's dating Deborah. And he seems a bit desperate. Normally, he's quite assertive with Larry. He has no problem telling him what he thinks. He has no problem sort of telling Larry to piss off if he feels like Larry's overstepped a line. But in this scene in particular, he seems a bit desperate for Larry's approval, because when Larry's on the phone, before Larry calls Cheryl on the phone about the dinner party, Richard's like, oh, I really need you to watch this special of mine before I sign off on it. He really wants Larry's approval. And it was just a subtle difference in his character that I hadn't noticed before, that normally he's very antagonistic and competitive with Larry, and their friendship is almost like frenemies in a way. or they are frenemies. But in this, for him to, you know, almost desperately seek Larry's approval and, you know, advice was just something I hadn't seen before.
Yeah, I feel like just adding to that, I was thinking before that Richard, I think, is trying to seek validation. And probably because even though him and Larry are frenemies, I think Larry's probably the best friend he's got. So he kind of wants, you know, validation from him. And he still, like, you know, cares for Larry and stuff. And he kind of wants his approval. Because Richard Lewis, you know, he's had a successful comedy career in his own right prior to his, you know, alcohol. And I think it was alcohol and drugs, wasn't it, for him?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, both, or maybe one or the other. I'm not sure. But yeah, Richard, like, to me, like, I'm not too familiar with his real life, but it seems like on the show, he's like washed out, you know, like a washed up comedian from like the 80s and 90s. So he's trying to get back on his feet. He's trying to have like a revival. So, and I think he knows because Larry was so successful with Seinfeld, and Larry, you know, he knows good comedy. Obviously, he's got the evidence for 9 seasons of one of the greatest shows of all time. He probably wants, you know, Larry to look at it, and maybe, I don't think he wants Larry to kind of vouch for him to have like a, you know, like a spot on a TV show or something, but probably he knows, look, Larry, you're one of my best friends, even though we fight a lot, you know, what's good and what's not, you know, watch my special. I kind of want to, know from someone else if I've still got it. And yeah, cause he wants to go back into comedy. So I think it's mostly just about validation.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And I think it demonstrates that he has a lot of complex feelings about Larry David and Larry David's success on one level, because he's his friend and, you know, presuming they've known each other at least during when Seinfeld was on in the timeline of Curb Your Enthusiasm, and maybe even before, you know, maybe they were friends in the 80s. You know, he probably is happy for Larry that he had such success and he's still riding that high from Seinfeld, but then he also probably resents it. You know, it's pretty common when someone you know or, you know, care for is kicking goals and maybe you're not. I've been in that situation where, you know, you are happy that they're doing well, but part of you also resents it because you're envious. You know, you experience a full spectrum of emotions while going through that. So I think Richard, you know, different emotions come up at different times. And this, he's a bit more desperate and seeking validation, but other times he's a bit more resentful and outwardly sort of antagonistic of Larry. And I'm sure, you know, he'll display different emotions as the series goes on.
Absolutely. Well, just one quick note before we jump onto the next scene. Like, one thing I thought of, I think with Richard, when he got with his first girlfriend, the one that him, like, her and Larry have, you know, problems with each other, I think he was more with her for like the looks, and maybe she wasn't, you know, she didn't find God and, you know, she didn't have any aspirations. She's probably just like a, I guess you could say, a bimbo of sorts. And the Richard was kind of, you know, into her sexually and intimately. But I think with Deborah, he's probably more into her like as a person, you know, even though she is a beautiful woman herself, you know, she kind of likes her more for her personality rather than her, maybe her looks and stuff.
Yeah, I think the relationship that he's seeking with Deborah or someone like Deborah is one that would be less shallow. His previous girlfriend.
Less shallow, yes. Yes.
Yeah, I'm sure they got along and I'm sure there wasn't only bad things in the relationship. But yeah, I think you just seek something with a bit more depth.
Yeah, absolutely. It's Friday night and they, as well as Jeff, are enjoying their dinner. Deborah is excited about going to the Emmys with Richard in a few days. Everything seems to be going well as Jeff asks for ketchup for his steak, as he says that he can't eat it without the condiment. And Larry's like, what the hell? The chef's prepared such a wonderful meal and you want ketchup on it? That's an insult, which I agree with.
Yeah, no, I think Larry's right in that you don't, it would be insulting to the chef. But I think Larry David feels a bit insulted as well, because he's like, well, I didn't cook the dinner, but I'm paying for this nice dinner and you're kind of degrading it a bit with your ketchup. So I think Larry feels
absolutely
insulted, and also on behalf of the chef. And, you know, the chef's nice enough to bring out the ketchup, but he looks a tiny bit.
He looks a bit dirty when he walks off, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. He's professional. Yeah. He doesn't say he'll do anything. He does it, but I'm sure he's a bit unhappy about it.
Of course. Yeah. No, you can see like his face changes when he walks off. And, you know, Larry jokingly says, I'm never going to invite you over for dinner ever again, to everyone. And they start laughing.
It's one of those rare moments where Larry makes a sort of a dark joke, or, you know, a joke that could be interpreted as like tasteless, but everyone actually gets it. Most of the time he makes jokes like that and people misinterpret it and he has to backtrack and explain himself. But one of the few risky jokes that actually lands for him.
And that lands. Yeah, exactly. And that scene, it cuts to the next one. So they're all in the, like, one of the lounge rooms at Larry and Cheryl's house, and they're all having coffee and brownies after dinner. And Larry, he's having trouble setting up the TV and the VHS tape of Richard's special, which is upsetting Richard. Cheryl tells Larry to get a new TV guy to come fix it, but he doesn't want to fire him as the TV guy is black and that he may get upset or be accused of being racist. Pretty heavy subject matter.
Yeah, he's probably got some lingering guilt and, you know, he's a bit more sensitive, I guess, or a bit more nervous about firing a black man, especially after, I can't remember which episode, but where he makes the offhanded comment to the black guy.
To the doctor. or
the doctor that they see, you know, and he's got to sort of explain that he's not actually a racist. So, you know,
affirmative action.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Lingering feelings from that has probably made him a bit more like, oh, you know, this could turn out bad. I think it's just made him a bit less, a bit more, what's the word I'm trying to say?
Cautious.
Cautious. Thank you.
That's right. You're welcome. Anyway, Richard, he suggests that they go all to his house to watch the special because his TV's working. Deborah, she begins to have an allergic reaction to the brownies that Jeff's wife made. She asks Jeff, did you put peanuts in the brownies? And then Jeff's like, oh, no. My wife never uses peanuts, you know, and whatever. Larry asks Cheryl if she told Randy about the peanut allergy, and Cheryl's like, what? You never told me. And then Richard's like, what are you talking about? You know, I was there when Larry made the call and told you. And Larry thinks it's probably interference from the phone as they all begin arguing about it as Deborah's getting sicker and sicker.
Yeah. And this scene kind of almost ends there's like a little run of good luck for Larry where, you know, he lands the joke in the previous scene. In this one, you know, normally it would be a case of, you know, he forgot to tell Cheryl about the peanut allergy, or, you know, he'll insist that he did tell Cheryl or whoever's on the phone, but they won't believe him. But in this case, even though it was no one's fault, really, it's poor phone reception, Larry David did the right thing, you know, and Richard's there to back him up. Yeah. And this scene with the peanut allergy, unfortunately, flaring up for Deborah, it's kind of, you know, normally in other episodes, something like that would be Larry's fault. You know, he forgot to give the information, or he gave it to the wrong person, or he gave it incorrectly, whatever. But he's kind of had like a little run of good luck in this episode, or especially in this scene, you know, he did the right thing. And the fact that peanut allergy was miscommunicated wasn't his fault. That joke in the previous scene landed. And also the fact that the TV is not working at this stage in the episode, it changes later on. But at this stage, it's not really his fault, you know, and Cheryl is like, yeah, you got to fire this guy. So these little tiny little misfortunes have happened along the way, but none of them have really been Larry's fault, which is rare for him that he has such a good run of not being to blame for things going wrong.
Absolutely, because he's not the cause of the whole peanut situation, you know. No. It was actually the phone reception. Yeah, and Cheryl's like, you know, she's really apologetic to Deborah. You know, she's like, I'm really sorry. You know, this has never happened before. And, you know, as Deborah, I'd probably be pretty pissed off at Cheryl and Larry for not telling the chef.
Yeah, and Richard Lewis is really pissed off. He's blaming Larry.
Oh, very mad.
You know, and I mean, I can understand in the moment why Richard would be pissed off, because, you know, Richard made a point of making sure there was no peanuts in the food. And even though it wasn't Larry, anyone's fault in particular, you know, it still didn't happen. And, you know, you would feel in defense of your girlfriend, so you would blame Larry being the host. Upon reflection, maybe he would reconsider, but in the moment, I can understand why he's a bit ticked off. I do like how this scene ends, where Larry and Cheryl and Jeff, you know, they're like, oh, we're really sorry. You know, I hope you get well.
Mm.
You know, take her home.
Yeah.
And as soon as she's gone,
Richard tries to give her the car keys and say, you can drive yourself home.
He doesn't
even want to take her. What a dog.
I know. No, he's a bit of a bastard to her.
A little bit.
And it's so confusing, because in the previous scene, or the, you know, a couple of scenes before this at the phone shop, he was fawning over her. He was like, she's my soulmate, I love her. And now he's like, I don't really want to deal with the consequences of your peanut allergy. Just drive yourself home. But as soon as they're gone, Larry's like, let's play Scrabble. And Jeff's like, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so they've kind of like, as soon as the doors close, they're like, oh, I don't care about him. I don't care about that anymore. Let's play Scrabble.
That's right. Because it doesn't affect them going to the Emmys. And it's interesting, because Larry joked while that he was trying to fix the TV, saying, why don't we play Scrabble instead? And Richard's like, you want to play Scrabble? Are you fucking out of your mind?
Yeah. Richard takes it seriously. But Larry's like, look, it's just a joke.
Yeah, exactly. But they actually want to play Scrabble. And, you know, I love how Larry turns to Cheryl at the end of that scene and says, oh, sorry, it's better to play with two people. And then Cheryl's thinking to herself, I didn't want to play anyway. what the hell? She's probably a little bit shocked about Deborah.
Yeah, she's probably happy that she doesn't have to play Scrabble with Jeff and Larry, because I'm sure it would be a nightmare. And
absolutely. The next day, Larry is having lunch with the TV guy, Mike, and he fires him. Mike accuses him for being black as the reason to fire him. Larry denies this, and he says that Larry fires white people too. I love that. He blames his wife for the decision to fire Mike, but he doesn't believe him. He walks off in a huff after leaving his tip. Larry goes back to his table to add more money to the tips, or to put more money on the table, I should say. Wanda spots him at the other end of the restaurant, and I love Wanda in this series. I loved her in season two, and it's great that she's right at the far end of the restaurant, and she spots Larry adding more to the tip, or what he's going to be later called as being a tip profiler.
Yeah, and you know that there's going to be a payoff for that. You know, they wouldn't just include her in a random scene for no reason.
Of course, yeah. No, but I love when Wanda was in, I think, a couple of episodes last season. I love how, like, when I saw Wanda, I'm like, yes, she's back. She's going to cause trouble for Larry. She's going to get all sassy. I love it.
you know that it's not going to work out well for Larry.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry, but I got five remotes. Nothing's working.
Just be honest, man, because I'm black, right? Right?
Why? Well, that couldn't be crazier. crazy? Why did I hire you?
That was over the phone, man. You didn't know I was black at the time.
All right, that's true, but I kept you around.
But you're getting rid of me, right?
I fire white people. I fired white people. I have fired plenty of white people.
I've been doing this 15 years, all right?
Okay. Okay. You know what? It's not even me. It's. Can I be... Okay. You want... Can we be honest here? Okay, let's be honest, okay? That's my wife.
Larry goes to Deborah's parents' house to apologize for what happened when her mother greets him. He walks in and sees a prayer group where he sees another black man fixing the TV. It's not Mike, but Larry's, you know, looking at him and he's like, oh, he's a black guy fixing the TV. And Larry's like, okay, cool.
Yeah, it's just a bit like, huh, isn't that a coincidence? You know, that's...
Yeah, isn't that a coincidence?
I didn't expect to see another African-American TV repair guy so soon.
Yeah, and he might be pretty good. Who knows?
Yeah. Maybe he's like, I'll get his number.
Yeah, I won't be racist if I hire another black TV guy.
Yeah, to prove he's not racist.
Of course.
A black TV repair guy.
Yeah, even though he might not be that good, who knows? No. Larry walks upstairs where Richard is supporting Deborah by her bedside and she has a bad reaction to the peanuts and off camera she has a swollen face. Deborah wants to still go to the Emmys but Richard insists that she shouldn't. Larry suggests Benadryl but Deborah refuses as she can't take medicine due to her religious beliefs. And I love the scene where Larry says, what, it's all about prayer? So what do? You pray for the TV? You know, you pray for this, you pray for that, you pray on the TV? And then Deborah's like, praying on the TV? What do you mean? Just hello, Larry just kind of like mocks her about her beliefs.
Yeah, Larry does like sort of, you know, being a bit of a smart ass from time to time. And I'm guessing that as soon as he found out that she was a Christian Scientist, he was just waiting for an opportunity to give her a bit of shit about it. And I think the Benadryl comment was a deliberate sort of dig at her to rile her up a bit.
To rile her up a bit, yeah. And while Deborah is, you know, talking about her, you know, not her pain, but her allergy and her swollen face and how she's not feeling well and stuff, he asked Deborah if the TV guy downstairs is any good and she's unsure. She's like, this is my parents' house. I don't know. The TV guy's any good.
Yeah, he definitely doesn't seem concerned about her well-being.
Nah, he's all about his needs and what he wants.
Yeah.
Larry walks downstairs again and the prayer group is about to begin. They invite Larry to join the circle and Larry is very hesitant for touching two other man's hands because they all hold hands in the circle. He tries to grab a woman to hold her hand, but the mother says no, she's got to be with her husband. And you can see Larry, he's hanging onto the two guys' hands by his pinkies. Obviously, it's a bit of homophobia at play. They commence their prayer as Larry is trying to get away from the circle. His phone begins to ring and that upsets the prayer group. He answers it as they all look at him in despair.
Yeah, I think Larry's relieved at that point. The phone came to the rescue and saved him from the prayer circle.
But I love how he was trying to get away for like, he didn't want to hold two guys' hands, even though it's nothing sexual or anything. You know, to him, it was very sexual. I guess it kind of is a bit homophobic in this case, would you say?
It's not that I disagree with you, but I didn't even think of the fact that there were two men. I thought he just didn't want to be in the circle at all. So any hands he was holding, he was trying to get away from. But it could well be that they were...
Yeah, because he tries holding the woman's hand, but then the mum says, no, she's got to be with her husband. You know, so I think he's probably funny with holding, you know, man's hands.
That's a good point. I didn't pick that up. But yeah, I mean, he could be... just a bit, yeah, just uncomfortable holding men's hands.
Oh, probably that, yeah. And he's hanging, I love how his pinkies are hanging off their hands and he's trying to get out. It's a lovely, lovely shot.
One of many of Larry's neuroses.
Neuroses, exactly. And he's got plenty of them. Richard and Larry are talking outside the house. Richard blames Larry for hiring a chef who blames the peanuts on their food or put the peanuts in their food. Richard has second thoughts about bringing Deborah to the Emmys due to her swelling, even though Larry mocks him and says it's one of his other, you know, mockings like he did with Deborah in the last scene. He reminds Richard that he said that he loves her for who she is. Larry jokingly suggests to Richard that he should give her a sneaky shot of medicine and maybe, you know, put it in brownies as a joke. And Richard says that's a fantastic idea. Let's put him in brownies.
Yeah, and then I think this scene again demonstrates the battle going on in Richard's mind, not just about this relationship, but who he's trying to be as a person. Because, you know, when they're at Larry's house, the way Larry is treating Deborah or just what eventuates at his house really pisses Richard off. But in this in this scene, he's almost, you know, he's agreeing with Larry. He's like, yeah, you're right. Like, you know, he's giving her shit about her faith as well. So he kind of goes back and forth in whether he respects her or whether he kind of mocks her. And I think that to and fro is in a way representative of, you know, he's trying to escape his older maybe darker, more troubled past and trying to be a better person, you know, by dating people who like Deborah. But, you know, it's, you can't just make a clean break sometimes. It's always, sometimes the transition is a lot of push and pull before you really move past a darker part. And I think that, you know, is demonstrated a bit in Richard, where he's like, I love her, I respect her. And then, you know, in private, he's like, yeah, you're right. Like, her religion's crazy and she should just, and then they make plans for her to take Benadryl. So it's, he's all over the place.
Yeah, he doesn't even have the heart to break up with her or, you know, tell her, you know, you shouldn't go in this condition or whatever. But yeah, I think, yeah, because he's trying to get away from his dark past. He's trying to hang on to something pure, in this case, Deborah. And yeah, he doesn't, because he probably thinks that if he lets Deborah go, he'll never find a woman like her, despite her religious beliefs.
Yeah, I think he's just, he seems like he's trying to convince himself to stay with her. But really, when it comes down to it,
he doesn't want to.
No, he doesn't want to. And I don't think, and, you know, it would be hard for a Christian scientist to date a non-Christian scientist, because their faith is obviously very important to them. And when it comes to things like medicine, I think that would be hard to be amenable about.
Hey, honey, can you go get me some Panadol from the chemist? we don't take Panadol.
Yeah. So, I mean, that, I'm sure there are, you know, couples in the world where that difference of faith coexists peacefully and it works, but it would be a real struggle.
A very real struggle indeed. In the next scene, Larry, because Larry says in the previous scene that he'll go to Susie because that's where Jeff got the brownies from. Larry asks Susie at her house for her brownie recipe. Susie says that she baked the brownies for her daughter, but she's upset when Larry says that Jeff brought them to the house for dinner and it was meant to be for her daughter because Jeff stole them from the dinner party. I love how Susie's like, you see what I'm dealing with here regarding Jeff? You see what I'm dealing with?
Yeah.
And, he takes food from my baby's mouth. He's just, yeah, like, Susie's
mouth. Yeah.
His own children's mouth. Susie paints Jeff as some like evil fucking charlatan dude.
Yeah. You know,
love it.
And like, he probably, you know, Jeff probably knew that the brownies weren't for him or that they were for the kids or whatever. And he's probably like, you know what, I'm just going to take these. Who cares? But yeah, her description of him, her using that to paint him as this like horrible person is a bit over the top, but it is hilarious. This scene actually has my favorite line when Larry's trying to convince her to give up the recipe and she's declining, saying it's a protected family secret, which is really, really, the more Larry insists by saying, you know, I'll tell you a secret, or, you know, you can trust me. Mm-hmm. She's getting more and more frustrated with Larry's unwillingness to accept that she won't tell the secret. And Larry finally cracks it. Yeah. And he just goes, it's not the Manhattan Project. Oh, man.
It's not the Manhattan Project. That's a good line. And I love how he goes really for the jugular. And he says, I might be, like, he lies. And like, he goes, he has to lie as a last resort. I love when he says, I might be losing a testicle. And then Susan's like, oh, my God. Yeah. He goes, yes, so I told you a secret. Now you can go to give me mine. You know, you got to give me the secret brandy recipe. And even Susie, like, after all that's like, I'm sorry, I can't do it. You know, on my grandmother's life, I got to, you know, leave my grandma's legacy or whatever she says. And she shuts the door on Larry. And as the door's closing, I love when Larry says, I just told you that I'm going to lose a ball.
Yeah. There are, you know, there's lots of things that explain who Larry are, but this kind of typifies him in one little scene where he's willing to lie about a serious medical condition to convince someone that he's being honest so that they can tell him a secret. You know, it's so complex, and it's a representation of Larry's twisted mind and, you know, regarding ethics and honesty and all the things that most people are pretty clear cut about. He's like, well, I'll tell a lie to demonstrate that I'm actually telling the truth, convince someone to tell me a secret that they don't want to tell me. It's so twisted, but it typifies Larry to a T.
Very dark. But no, not even, you know, Susie is so protective of that recipe, she wouldn't even do that for Larry.
No. If I had a secret that was that precious to me, and if someone was like, hey, I'll tell you a secret, it's like, well, it kind of doesn't make a difference. Like, if you want to tell me a secret, okay, I'll keep it. But it doesn't create a situation automatically where, well, now I'm obliged to, you know, it's not like you gave me $10 and I've got to pay you back. It's not a transaction. It's a choice. It's an individual choice.
Of course.
Larry thinking that, well, because he tells her a secret, she then automatically owes him a secret, is just like, no.
That's not how it works.
Personal. It's not a transaction.
Yeah, you don't trade for them.
No.
Later on, back at home, Cheryl is stunned at the Benadryl in the brownie idea that Larry and Richard come up with. They, you know, they give her an easy bake, you know, that instant brownie mixture, you know, that stuff you just add water or an egg or something and it all, you know, it's like that Betty Crocker style of instant brownies.
Yep.
Cheryl figures out that Richard doesn't want to take Deborah to the Emmys due to her swelling. They finally convince her to bake the brownies, even though she's very skeptical about it. And Larry asks her, you don't know how to bake brownies? I've never seen you bake anything. anything. And Cheryl's like, I can do it. Larry says that Deborah might believe that divine intervention would bring down her swelling, and she'll never suspect that the Benadryl are in the brownies because, according to him, there's no taste and no odor. Cheryl thinks the idea is stupid, and she reluctantly accepts the request. And we find out that Cheryl, you know, she's not really much of a baker.
Yeah, and one thing I noticed about Cheryl in this episode is that she seems a bit more passive. Usually in previous episodes, if Larry and Richard were trying to convince her to spike a brownie to secretly medicate a woman, you know, she would not just say that that's stupid, but it's the wrong thing to do. And she would stand by it. In this, she says, I don't want to do it because it's stupid, but she goes along with it anyway. She, you know, she's a bit cautious and a bit, like you said, skeptical. But normally she's like, no, she's very principled and she sticks with it. And in the scene back, just going back a bit, when Deborah and Richard leave and Larry and Jeff are like, let's go play Scrabble. And, you know, Larry's pretty mean, saying we don't want you to play because it's better with two. She just kind of, you know, even though she's happy not to play, she doesn't defend herself. She doesn't say, hey, Larry, that's mean or anything. She
thinks it's dumb. She takes it.
And in this, the fact that she doesn't, in this scene, the fact that she doesn't, you know, she says that she thinks it's stupid, but she still does it. I don't know. She seems a bit more passive in this episode.
Well, I feel like because the medicine that they're going to put in the brownies, it's to actually make someone feel better. I mean, if Larry said, look, I want to make this girl anaphylactic and, you know, I want to give her an allergy, can you put peanuts in the brownie? She'd be like, are you out of your fucking mind? I'm not going to kill this woman. You know what I mean? But I think because it's meant to like make someone feel better or you know, heal them of their, you know, allergies, that's where Cheryl's like, all right, I'll do it. It's dumb, but, you know, it's going to help Richard out and it's going to help you, Larry, as well. And Larry says, you know, this happened in our house, her allergic reaction. So I think Cheryl kind of feels like she owes them a favor and she's like, oh shit, yeah, okay. I better try and write what happened, yeah.
Yeah, she feels a bit responsible. No, that's a good point. And I'm just thinking of the ridiculousness of Larry. Normally you would put something in food to try and poison someone, but Larry's trying to spike a brownie with a medicine to heal someone, but
to make her better rather than worse.
But to Deborah, she would feel like she's being poisoned, you know.
Of course, she's never tasted Benadryl.
Be like, yeah, it's so twisted. It's brilliant.
Anyone else would freaking take the Benadryl. You know, they'd have the droplets or whatever it is. They just have it and it's all done.
Why,
Richard?
What?
Is that what this is about, Larry?
Well,
because you don't want to take her to the.
Okay, well, can you blame the guy? Why should he take her? She's hideous. I don't blame him.
Are you guys out of your mind?
Why?
It's not only that. I want her to get better.
Well, it's 80. Richard, it's 90%.
Not 90.
Don't have to lie to her. She's
got. It's not 90.
It's 85.
No,
15.
No. 75. 25.
No, it's not even that. But tell her the truth. You're embarrassed to be seen with her, and I don't blame him. And so what?
In the second last scene of the episode, Richard and Larry, they drop off brownies back at Deborah's parents' house. They invite themselves in to give her the treats. She takes a Benadryl infused brownie, and she says that they taste very different. They're not as good as the original recipe because obviously they're the easy to bake brownies. Larry and Richard try to convince her that they are the same as the other night. And Larry gets upset about it, you know, saying, oh, you don't think my wife's a good cook and all that kind of stuff. And they're all the same recipe and stuff, even though they're obviously not. So at first she says that, you know, she can't taste the Benadryl, obviously, but I like how, you know, it's not the Benadryl that makes them different. It's the fact that it's like that easy, you know, easy bake Betty Crocker kind of brownie mixture rather than like brownies made from scratch like Susie does.
Yeah, no, it's sort of a good misdirect in a way, because you would think that if there was any reason for the brownies to taste different, it would be the Benadryl, but it's actually because Larry couldn't get the recipe from Susie's.
Yeah, because Deborah mentions in the scene where she has the reaction that these are probably the best brownies she's ever eaten.
Yeah.
So once you have something which is fantastic and one of your favorites, anything else is basically subpar.
Yeah, and you would feel, I don't know, like Larry's obviously lying, but to Deborah, you know, not knowing that he's being dishonest and trying to sort of secretly poison / cure her, you know, he's to her, he's being offended, but she's also being offended because he's trying to say to her, no, they're the same brownies, when she's like, no, they're not the same brownies. So again, each scene works on so many levels in this episode. I really like it.
It does. Yeah, no, it's a good scene, this one. And, you know, even Larry puts it back on her, you know, making her out to be the bad person.
Yeah. And then he kind of just changes his tune. He just starts talking about the remote controls.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's just like, how many remote controls do you have?
So, yeah. It's all back to the TV.
You know, it just de-escalates really quickly, you know, when the argument could go on, and it's just like, let's talk about remote controls, and then he just leaves.
He's just pissed off. He tries leaving the Tupperware container with the brownies, but she just gives them back to him. In the final scene, Cheryl is with Wanda and her other friends at home as they're trying to figure out how to work the satellite to watch the red carpet for the Emmys. She asks Larry to fix the TV as Wanda asks her who the black guy was and why she fixed his tip, calling him a tip profiler. Larry tries to explain the situation as he gets frustrated. Wanda gets up and turns the satellite on from the TV box. All you had to do is just push that button. See that green button? You just had to push it. And then the TV starts playing. And to finish off the episode, Richard and Deborah, they appear at the Emmys at the red carpet. And Joan Rivers is stunned when she sees Deborah's off-camera swollen face. And she comes up with those really mean lines about her, like, I've seen better faces on a hemorrhoid. And Cheryl and Wanda and the other friends are all stunned at her face.
Yeah, the off-screen humor and everyone reacting to it kind of reminded me of something they did a lot in Seinfeld, obviously with the bubble boy, with the goiter. You know, you use your own imagination to realize how horrible it is, and you use other people's reactions to gauge. And I thought, I'm sure Larry, you know, maybe that's just a thing that he likes doing, but, you know, good choice.
Yeah, very good choice. Yeah, no, it's usually, especially with like Seinfeld and Curb, a lot of the off-screen stuff makes it like 10 times funnier. I think obviously they didn't want to, you know, add any prosthetics. I think it actually worked. Not seeing Deborah's face, you can just kind of leave it to your imagination.
Yeah, cheaper production budget too. It's like, well, we don't have to pay makeup, so we'll just say that she's hideous and people can fill in the gaps.
And probably they don't want to upset people who, you know, get anaphylactic reactions, you know, and they don't want to, you know, put like big swollen faces and give people who have peanut allergies, they might get upset or offended or whatever.
Character is just this walking offense machine who just goes around saying and doing the wrong things pretty much his whole life, you know, and obviously it's a fictional TV show, but it's funny that in a show where that is the character, but they're also being considerate about how people with allergic reactions might feel. It's, you know, it's a nice little contradiction.
Exactly. And that ends the episode, my friend.
Yeah, no, a really, really good episode. Normally we rate these out of 5. This episode's no different. Last week, I think you rated the introduction, the first episode of season 3, 3.5. I gave it 3. We both said it's like, you know, it was an amazing episode, but it was a good start, a good gentle introduction back into Curb. You know, it sort of sets the scene, especially about the ongoing storyline about the restaurant, which was mentioned a couple of times in this episode. Did you think that this episode was better than the last? And what do you give it out of 5?
Well, this episode, I got a few guffaws out of it. But there are a few things that, you know, they were kind of, I felt like they were shoehorned in, like the mic situation and stuff. I feel like they could have elaborated more on that. Like, I know Wanda, you know, Wanda calls him out for it in the final scene and she's the one that fixes the satellite. But I was hoping for something maybe a bit bigger because we don't really see Larry in the last scene. He just kind of pops in to explain the mic situation to everyone and then walks off. Like, I really felt like there should have been like a bigger payoff and then the Emmy scene. I don't know. I was hoping for something a bit bigger at the end and a bit more consequential for Larry. But other than that, you know, it was good to see like Richard back and, you know, I'm Richard, you know, he's in a lot of future episodes on the show. So it'd be good to see him again. And he's trying to turn a new leaf despite his girlfriend's allergy issues. But overall, I mean, I give this one also 3.5 out of 5. I mean, it's not a bad episode. It's enjoyable. And like I said, I did have a few laughs, but yeah, it's not quite one of the greatest. It's not a beloved aunt or the doll from season 2. What about you, man?
I give this one 4 out of 5. I thought it leaned into Curb, it leaned into itself more. You know, it was
right.
Larry being more twisted than last episode. You know, again, even though he was trying to medicate someone, the fact that he was doing it without their consent and then that person would see it as being poisoned is, you know, just a twisted sort of bunch of mental gymnastics and, you know, ethical conundrums that I just think it's brilliant. But yeah, I did feel like there wasn't some satisfying payoffs in scenes like the Mike storyline. It felt a bit, you know, last minute, or maybe they just couldn't think of any good ideas to flesh it out more. It just felt a bit, it didn't feel like it was out of place, but it just felt underwhelming. But I thought it was great. I thought that it was nice how they showed Cheryl being slightly different. Like, as I said before, she's a bit more passive in this episode.
Yeah, she's more numb to Larry.
Yeah, maybe it's not actually being passive. Maybe she's just like, you know what, I just don't care. I've tried to make him better and it's not going to work, so I'm just going to put up with it.
It's a precursor to their eventual divorce.
Yeah, and whatever it is, it was just a slightly different side of her, which was nice to see. And also the different dimensions of Richard and his battle, you know, even though he doesn't treat Deborah very well and he's quite mean to her behind her back. I think showing him being in this sort of like to and fro was a nice addition to his character, fleshes him out a bit.
Yeah, he's got a big existential crisis ahead of him.
Yeah, there's just something going on. It's just not all, he needs some calm and he's trying to figure out how to get it.
Yeah, that's right. But anyway, that was episode 2 of Curbcast season 3. Thank you so much for listening. At the moment, this is a bonus podcast on Patreon. So if you are a $2 or more a month subscriber to our Patreon, page you are listening to this. If you do have anyone who listens to our other podcast, Bidwab Ask, and you know, they want to jump on and get some benefits for Bidwab Ask as well as this podcast as well, just let them know so they can have a listen. You can listen to season one on our free podcast feed, the Bidwab Ask one, but seasons 2 and 3 are currently exclusive on Patreon. So check that out.
Yeah. And if you are a patron, thank you so much for supporting us. We really, really appreciate it. And as Ivan said, if you think anyone else might be interested, let them know. And yeah, they can sign up for as little as a couple of bucks a month. We will be doing the rest of season 3 all the way through. And then after that, we will be finishing off season 11, which we're about halfway through. And we're just writing the last sort of 4 episodes for that. And that should be done later this year, early next year.
So absolutely.
Next week, we are doing the 3rd episode of Curbcast. It'll be released Wednesday again. And it's called Club Soda and Salt. I have no idea what that title means. I'm guessing maybe it's hinting at the restaurant. You know, maybe it will be a restaurant focused episode, but we'll wait and see. And
Absolutely.
Wait and see. I'm Stephen.
I'm Ivan. And if you want to reach out to us, you can find us on social media. Go to the show notes and check out those links. We also have a new email just for Curbcast, Steve, that we've set up a week or so ago. So you can email our other email, bidwabaskpodcast@gmail.com, or you can email our new one, curbcast@gmail.com. That is curbcast@gmail.com. Or it might be curbcastpod, I think. It's one of those.
It'll be in the show notes.
It's in the show notes, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Actually, no, sorry, curbcastpod@gmail.com.
There you go. We got it right there.
That's the one. Beautiful. Excellent. All right, you take care of yourselves and each other, and we'll see you next week for Curbcast and for our regular podcast, Bidwab Ask.
Catch you later.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is part of Mishmash Media, an independent podcast network. Follow us on social media @MishmashMediaAU or support us on Patreon. All those links are in the show notes.